Each year, the World Food Prize chooses more than 20 students, mostly from Iowa, to spend 8 weeks in other parts of the world. Their goal? Researching efforts to end hunger. From Iowa Public Radio News, this is River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. In the first half hour today, my colleague Catherine Perkins talks with four of this year's Borlaug Ruan interns. Then I talk with 19-year-old Muscatine entrepreneur Tyler Fincham about his company, Farm Manuals Fast, which sells digital copies of farm equipment instruction manuals. We'll find out about the interesting niche he discovered, all coming up after this news.
This is River to River. I'm Catherine Perkins, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. The World Food Prize Foundation is honoring Governor Terry Branstad and U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack for their efforts to build economic ties between the U.S. and China. All money raised at the dinner event will support another effort to build ties across cultures. Every summer, the Borlaug Ruan Internship Program sends young people to research facilities in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East to learn about other cultures and to work with world-renowned food scientists. Most of the students have returned from their 8-week experience and are in the studio to tell us about it. But first, I want to talk with Lisa Fleming, Director of Global Education Programs for the World Food Prize Foundation. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Catherine.
So tell us a little bit more about the Borlaug Ruan internship. How were these students chosen for this experience?
Well, to start with, the students must first complete our Global Youth Institute, which takes place in conjunction with our annual symposium and laureate award ceremony every October. After they've attended, they've written a paper on global food security, presented it to a panel of experts, and then they're eligible to apply for our 60-day all-expenses-paid international internship. So typically we have around 60 to 70 applicants, and this year we were able to place 21 students in 13 countries abroad.
And how do you decide where students are going to go and what they're going to do?
Great question. Basically, based on the student interest, they've given us countries of interest and projects of interest in their application materials, and the needs of the research centers that have agreed to accept the students that summer, we match them. So, for instance, if someone is interested in animal science or plant breeding or more social science type research, we place them in these kind of positions with these kinds of mentors.
And how many students are selected each year?
In the early years, we had 2 and then 5 and then 9, on to 13, 14, and this year we were able to place 21 in 13 countries.
Wow. So how many students overall have had this kind of experience?
To date, the internship program was initiated in 1998, and to date we have placed 182 students abroad.
Wow. So what do you want to happen as a result of these young people having this experience?
Well, we hope that by putting these students side by side with these world-renowned researchers, that they're able to be inspired. They're able to follow in the footsteps of Dr. Norman Borlaug, our founder, as well as our World Food Prize laureates who were such great achievers themselves in the fight against ending world hunger. And so we hope that from this experience, they're able to go on and follow their careers and academic and career paths in the like of these laureates.
You've had 14 years to do this. Have you had students go on to work in this field?
Oh, definitely, definitely. We've launched many careers. We have many students now. Some are plant breeders. Some are getting their PhDs. Some are in are veterinarians now. We have one student who's gone on to become a CDC officer in Montana for the state of Montana. Many others are traveling abroad, working for World Food Program, just in a variety of disciplines.
Lisa, thanks so much for talking to me. I'm going to turn my attention now to Michaela Hoffelmeyer, a senior at Winterset High School who spent her internship at the International Rice Research Institute in Los Baños, Philippines. Is that right, Michaela?
Yep, that's right.
And I got your last name right, too? Great. So tell me a little bit about your experience. We don't do a lot of rice farming in the U.S., so What did you learn about this crop?
Well, like you said, we don't do a lot of that in Iowa even. So it was really starting out from knowing nothing and then to every day being involved with hands-on work in the field, like transplanting, to working in the lab, the molecular biology side, where I had the chance to do some DNA extraction and help with identifying heat shock proteins in rice, and even more just working in the greenhouse. So it was really an all-inclusive internship where I was exposed to every aspect of rice production, and my work mostly focused with heat tolerance and heat stress. So that was my focus of all my work.
So what most excited you about the work that you were doing?
The concept of a staple food was really, it was a new concept to me. People eat rice there every day for every meal. And so it was that idea that I'm working on something that affects these people's lives every day, to eat rice for lunch, dinner, and then to be working on it all day long. It was just a new experience and a new feeling that really gave purpose to my work and really helped drive me to want to do better and want to help these people because I knew how much it affected them.
So now what are your future plans?
I want to go to Iowa State University and major in global resource systems, which it's a newer program, but I think it'd be a good experience for me. I'd like to go do some abroad, study abroad things and learn more about the world. I'm not sure I want to go into research exactly, but maybe a political science type of thing. But I'm not exactly sure, but this has definitely helped open some doors for me and given me a lot of connections I will use.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back to you in just a few moments, but I want to talk with one of the young men now. And Blake, you're going to have to help me with your last name.
Oh, sure. Thank you, first of all, for having me. But my last name is Megaki.
Now, I understand you're a senior at Keokuk High School, and you spent your summer at the M.S. Swaminathan?
Oh, yes, that's correct.
Okay, Swaminathan Research Foundation in Chennai, India, I think. Okay,
yes,
great. So tell me a little bit about what you did in India. Did you work with a particular crop?
No, I did not. Actually, from the start, I was more interested in social research. So I spent my internship researching how a particular project of MSSRF had uplifted and empowered people, especially their purchasing and bargaining powers.
Okay. So who did you work with?
I worked in a village outside of Pondicherry, actually, and they were Dalit farmers. Well, first off, Dalits are the former untouchables during the caste system, so they remain very marginalized and downtrodden. And really what had happened, MSSRF came in, and that's M.S. Swaminathan Foundation, and they came in, held this well renovation project, and through that, these Dalit farmers, they're able to cultivate more land with the new water access and also crops that require more water, thereby increasing their income. And also through the project, MSSRF has introduced various community-based organizations which have empowered them and brought them together, and now they're able to encourage accountability from banks, from middlemen, and this is something they've never really been able to experience before. Now they're certainly much more empowered to solve their own problems.
So what did you learn about hunger and poverty and addressing those problems through this internship?
Sure, that's a good question. Well, first off, I think the main thing is that it's such a multifaceted issue. And as I saw in my research, it really involves social issues like attitudes toward gender and history, the caste system, and political issues, but also the science issues. I saw how system of rice intensification and other agricultural interventions really help these farmers. So really it's the issue that requires political, social, agricultural, as well as just a general empowerment of these people. So I think that's really what makes it fascinating for me.
So which of those areas that you mentioned are you planning to go into?
Well, I'm most interested in social research.
And so what do you think you're going to do as a result of this experience?
Well, I plan to study international relations and peace and conflict studies.
Where at?
I'm not sure.
Well, you're a senior. You've got some time to make up your mind, don't you? Okay.
Yes.
Sarah Kunch is a senior at Holy Trinity Catholic High School in Fort Madison, and her summer internship found her at the International Potato Center in Lima, Peru. So, Sarah, what did your friends say when you told them you'd be spending your summer studying potatoes?
They were shocked at first.
I bet they were. And what did you learn about potatoes?
pretty much everything you need to learn about potatoes. Well, learning how they're farmed, learning the different altitudes that potatoes are grown at, different seasons, different types of potatoes, purple potatoes, blue potatoes, green potatoes, every potato under the sun.
And, of course, there's been news recently about the success of the sweet potato in Africa. Was that something that you were, you know, was that kind of top of mind of the people that you were working with?
For my division at SIP, El Centro Internacional de la Papa, or SIP as it's known as, no. I was in production systems and the environment, but there was the division at SIP that was close to mine was working with the sweet potato, so they were talking about it.
And what most excited you about the work that you got to do?
What most excited me was watching everyone's research come together. I was part of a team, and I was part of a different section of a team, and watching everyone's research come together to fit this one project was something that was very cool for me to see.
And what did you learn about hunger and poverty as a result of this?
I learned that poverty and hunger are everywhere, and it's not always something that you can see. When I was in Lima, I got the opportunity to go and tour Peru for 3 days to see the different areas such as the jungle and the highlands, and I just realized that these are the poorest areas, and these people can barely survive, but yet they get by just by doing as much as they can and with as many help as they can. And it was just something really new to me to experience.
So let's talk with Sam Schulte now, who is a freshman at St. Olaf College, or St. Olaf, I should say, College, majoring in biology. He's originally from West Des Moines. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Catherine.
And I understand you interned with the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center in Albatan, is that right?
Yeah, Albatan.
Albatan, mm-hmm. Mexico.
Yep.
So did you know what you wanted to study at college before this experience?
I did. Well, I wasn't sure, but I've always had an interest in biology, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but this definitely piqued my interest in plants and helped to solidify what I want to do later in life.
And what do you want to do?
Well, now I'm really leaning towards studying plants and, you know, going and furthering my education specifically in that. And I definitely plan on continuing my education after undergraduate. So it really has sparked a big interest in plants for me.
So tell me a little bit about what you learned about this field that you plan to study through this internship.
Sure. So I looked just mainly at the hard science part of it. I really didn't do any social science work. So I just learned a lot about identifying traits in different lines of wheat, and so that was the specific area that I was working in.
And what most excited you about the work that you were doing?
I just thought it was really incredible. I actually went to a place about an hour outside of where I worked called Toluca, and we got some samples from some wheat plants there, and then after that we extracted the DNA and then looked at the differences in DNA between the different plants, and it was just incredible to see all those steps and to see how advanced science is now.
I want to talk with all of you now, so feel free to jump in whenever I toss out these questions, okay? But had any of you traveled outside the United States before this experience?
I just kind of been to Mexico just across the border, but really this is my first time being really far outside the United States.
And so what was it like to be immersed in another culture? Michaela, you want to jump in on this one?
Yeah, this was my first time outside the U.S., and it was definitely interesting to go somewhere where they where America had such an effect on the culture there. They speak English very fluently, but they have a variety of native dialects, so that was an experience totally new to me, being around people who I couldn't understand the word they were saying. And then public transport was just completely new as well. They have a whole new system of buses and motorcycles that you can just jump in. And it's just it's an eye-opening experience to see how so many people in the world get around and work together to do that.
So do any of you have a favorite story for from this experience, whether it was something that happened at your internship or maybe it was just something that happened while you were in the country that you want to share?
Sure, I do. This is Blake. One time I was with my mentor visiting this village that they had introduced a similar project to what I ended up researching, and we went out through this field to to view the well structure, and it started raining really hardly, and so it, we were walking through all this mud, and I got really muddy. And as we walked back, I had an umbrella that these people that were sponsoring it gave us all, and I invited children to come join me under the umbrella. And suddenly they switched from Tamil to English, and I was, like, so shocked that they knew English. But from then, they noticed I was so muddy, and they kept pointing to my shoes, and it became very clear what they were wanting to do, and they were offering to wash my shoes. And I was like, no, no. I kept saying no, but they wouldn't leave me alone, so I just let them, and it was just this, like, sudden rush of children around my shoes, cleaning them off, and it was just a really humbling experience that even though they didn't have shoes, they weren't even wearing any, they thought that they should be cleaning mine. So that was definitely a very unique experience.
Mm, wow. Did any of you meet a particular person during this experience that you're going to remember well beyond your time in the country?
I definitely did. I made a really good friend named Miguel, and he took me to a lot of places around Mexico City while I was there, and as well as served as a really good mentor in the lab. And actually, it was just my birthday a few days ago, and he put together a video, and everyone in my lab said a quick message to me, and he put that on my Facebook. And so, yeah, I'll definitely remain friends with Miguel for a long time and hope I can visit him someday.
Mm. Sarah, do you have any stories you want to share or people you want to tell us about?
Yes. My supervisor, Ruby, was like my Peruvian mother. Every day I came into the office and she'd have some new treat for me. My favorite day was when she brought in this tuber. And it was a Yacon tuber and it tasted like an apple. But she realized how much I liked this tuber and she brought it in every day for me. And she was just always watching out for me and making sure that I learned everything I possibly could while I was at in Peru. And she recently moved to Florida to get her PhD in agronomy, and she's invited me down for spring break to take her and her son to Disney World.
Oh. What was the biggest surprise that you found living in India, Blake?
The biggest surprise? Well, that's a good question. I think the biggest surprise for me was what they view as freedom and what shouldn't be restricted, such as travel. There are essentially no traffic laws, or at least they're not enforced. And so that was definitely the biggest shock from the start, and also just the way waste is disposed of, just kind of everywhere. And that's certainly a shock for someone from the U.S., and that's the biggest culture shock for me.
Mm. Michaela, was there a story or a person you wanted to tell us about?
Definitely. I had the chance to play on a basketball team at Erie and at the International Rice Research Institute. And, I mean, I made so many friends, even from my coworkers. I had two, Jean and Lovely, who I worked with every day, and I saw them in the office, and they were like my big sisters. And then my boss, Dr. Krishna Jagadish, he was an inspiration that I can't put into words. His view on life and everything in between was really inspirational and just an absolute honor to work with. But I made more friends than I can count and relationships that I could never have imagined before I got there.
Mm. Now, for all of you, did this experience change you? Would you say you're a changed person as a result of having done this?
Okay, well, I'd say, I mean, it definitely opens your eyes to the world of poverty and hunger no matter where you go. And it definitely shows you how much there is to do and how much has been done, but everything can be improved. So it fills you with a new inspiration in life that It's hard to tell people about in words or presentations or pictures, because no one will ever really know the exact experiences that you had. But it shows you the world and how you can improve it.
Sam, would you say it was hard to come home?
It definitely was hard to come home. I was extremely sad when I had to leave them on the last day. And it was just weird to think that, you know, I might not see any of them ever again. So that was really hard for me. But at the same time, I was equally excited to see my family and my friends after not seeing them for so long. But, yeah, it was definitely hard to leave.
Mm. Does this change the way that you view your life here in the United States, would you say?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. Even, like, you know, going back to having to pay $1.50 for water where I paid, like, 25 cents in Mexico. I mean, just a lot of differences that I'm now noticing and just a different way of life that you have in Mexico. Everyone says good morning to each other, even if you don't know the person. It's just, I definitely see a lot of differences, and I do view my life differently now.
Hmm. Now, you all have had an experience that probably not very many people your age have had, and many of you are going to be going back to high school classrooms. I wonder if you're going to be talking to your friends about issues of hunger and poverty, and if you are, what you're going to tell them. Michaela, you want to jump in?
Sure. Well, going back, this was actually my first day back at high school, so that was interesting to get back. But yeah, you definitely, you talk about what you've seen, but it's hard, especially with people your age, for them to understand how exactly you've been affected. And granted, you can tell them, and I have some really awesome, great, supportive friends who have been so supportive of me, but they just they don't understand, and they can try their best. It's no one's fault that they can't see what you saw, and it's hard definitely to be back. It's a transition, but you can share what you can, and hopefully that helps them understand.
Blake, what about you?
Definitely. I hope to use this experience to, I guess, enlighten and raise awareness of what hunger issues are really like and how we can make a difference. And I think we can certainly do a lot.
Sarah, how about you? What are you going to be talking to your friends about?
Most definitely, I'll try to get them involved. Being able to go to a Catholic high school, we can discuss issues such as social justice and poverty in our theology classes, and getting students on board in many activities such as food drives or like a hunger banquet or something that we've done in the past, and I'd really like to incorporate that on a more serious level this year, being my last year at high school, and hope that it continues while I'm gone.
Sam, how about you?
Well, as I get ready to go to college, I think I'm going to definitely try to get involved with groups of people who have the same interests in hunger as I do. And so, yeah, I think it's motivated me to, you know, find those other people who want to study the same things that I want to study.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for coming in to tell us about your experience. It was just really wonderful to talk to all of you.
Yes. Thank you.
Michaela Hoffelmeyer is a senior at Winterset High School. Blake McGecky is a senior at Keokuk High School. Sarah Kunch is a senior at Holy Trinity Catholic High School in Fort Madison, and Sam Schulte is a freshman at St. Olaf College, majoring in biology. He's originally from West Des Moines. All of these students recently completed their Borlaug Ruan internships through the World Food Prize Foundation. We also spoke with Lisa Fleming, who's the director of global education programs for the World Food Prize in Des Moines. Coming up, we'll hear from a University of Iowa student who's running his own business. Farm Manuals Fast started as a profit-making venture, but has spawned a foundation to help farmers in developing countries. That's as River to River continues on Iowa Public Radio.
So nice to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. In his junior year of high school, Muscatine native Tyler Fincham created a simple and unprecedented business. His company, called Farm Manuals Fast, sells digital copies of farm equipment instruction manuals. 3 years later, this business is thriving, and Fincham, who is now a 19-year-old sophomore business student at the University of Iowa, has decided to change his business plan. We'll find out about that a little bit later. But first of all, Tyler Fincham, welcome to our studio in Iowa Public Radio.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Let's talk about how this started. Take us back to high school, and how you got the idea to create digital copies of these instruction manuals.
Sure. Well, I came up with the idea my junior year of high school. You know, I lived on a farm my whole life, and it was always my job growing up to find the operator's manual for our combines and tractors. My father would always seem to misplace or lose them. So, you know, I had the tricky job of finding them. And occasionally I wouldn't be able to find them at all, so I'd have to start searching online and other places. And, you know, it was a really big pain for me, quite honestly. And I just kind of figured that there had to be an easier way to go about finding this information, because it wasn't really the actual paper manual that my father needed so much as the information that it contained. So I kind of got the idea, why not digitize these manuals into a PDF form and then make them available online for not just my father, but farmers all over the world.
If I'm having this problem, my farm's having this problem, then there are other farms out there searching around for manuals in the barn or wherever it may be, in an office or somewhere.
Exactly.
Okay. So you started digitizing these, and initially you just did it for yourself. How did you first start sharing it?
You know, I came up – I had some web design experience in the past, so I just kind of built my own website. And my main goal with designing the website was to make everything as automated as possible. Since I was dealing with digital manuals, you know, I figured if I could make the website and the server do everything for me, as a high school student who, you know, has homework and whatnot, it would make my life a lot easier.
Okay, so that as much as possible, it runs by itself. It serves people without you having to do anything.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Except I assume scan the manuals, or perhaps you pulled them down off the internet?
No. Yeah. Scanning the manuals took most of the time. You know, I haven't really scanned any manuals in a while, but that definitely starting off, that took a while.
Okay. So when did it occur to you, hey, ka-ching, this could be something I could make some money on?
Well, you know, it took a while. I actually – when I really started the business, my main goal was really being at my junior year of high school for college applications and maybe getting some scholarships. And, you know, it really didn't make any actual money for probably a good couple months.
So what did you say? You said you offering this, and then you'd say you can download this for how much?
You know, most of my manuals were priced at $10.
Okay.
And, you know, I kind of – it was a fun experience starting it off, because you never really know what to expect, and you don't know if there's going to be any customers at all or how people – there's always going to be problems.
What was the reaction? Did you quickly know this was a good idea?
No.
There was a market?
No, definitely not. You know, for a while there I was really concerned that it might be a total failure. Fortunately, that turned out not to be the case.
Mm-hmm. How do people find out about you? They just search for that name.
Yeah.
Farm Manuals Fast.
Well, the majority of my customers find my website through search engines like Google. Usually they'll type in something like International 1440 Combine Operator's Manual or something like that. And since there's really not too many websites or companies that do what I do, I usually am in the top of the search bar.
Now, I know many listening have this question, because I did when I heard about this. These manuals do not belong to you. You didn't create them. How is it possible that you can put them out there, scan them, and make money off them without getting into a copyright infringement?
Definitely. Yeah, that's a really big concern that I had going into it. You know, being a junior in high school, I obviously didn't know much about copyright law or anything like that, but I did quite a lot of research, and fortunately, as it turned out, for the manuals that I sell, I'm able to sell them because they're in the public domain. Basically, the way copyright law was is that you had to actually put a copyright notice on the front page of the manual, which fortunately companies like John Deere and International Harvester did not do.
Until what year?
Right now, Congress changed the law in, I believe it was 1990, basically making so all written documents were automatically copyrighted. So really, I can only sell manuals created before 1990.
Mm-hmm. Have there ever been any legal challenges? You've been contacted with anybody with any of those concerns? Or was
You know, not really. I was kind of surprised. I know, you know, companies like John Deere are especially protective over their intellectual property. And, you know, I never really had any problems. But I like to think that, especially starting off at being a high schooler, it probably wouldn't be too wise for a company like John Deere to start suing me and whatnot.
An entrepreneurial youngster in Iowa to be attacked by John Deere. That's not very good PR.
Exactly.
All right. Tell me how big this is. How often, how many customers have you had in these 3 years of existence?
Sure. Right now, we've just passed our – I say we. I mean, the company's just passed its 10,000th sale.
10,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you figure that's at least one manual. And a lot of times farmers will buy multiple manuals in one order. So it's been extremely successful, especially right now as farmers are getting more and more prepared for the harvesting season. I'm getting a whole lot of combine sales. I'd say I'm probably getting around 30 sales a day right now.
All 50 states.
All 50 states and almost all countries and continents. And, you know, when you consider that, you know, my lowest price manual is $10, you know, 30 orders a day is making a pretty good amount of money.
Okay. Can you be more specific about that? Pretty good amount of money?
Sure. You know, last year I made around $50,000. This year it's actually looking upwards to making around, I'd say, $100,000. So it's certainly paying for college.
19 years old. Congratulations. There are some dropped jaws out there listening to this program. Let me remind you, I'm talking with Tyler Fincham today. He's a creator and owner of Farm Manuals Fast. He's a sophomore at the University of Iowa, majoring in business finance and originally from Muscatine, grew up on a farm just west of Muscatine. And let's talk about another dimension that you developed a year or so into this venture, I believe. You also help farmers in developing countries, farmers who perhaps can't even afford to order these manuals.
Yeah. Well, you know, I designed Farm Manuals Fast, so everything was automated. So, you know, once it really got started, I really wasn't doing too much with the website. So I kind of got bored a little bit, maybe. And, you know, I always had this idea where, since I already had all these manuals and things, why not try helping third world farmers who, you know, needed the help more than probably any farmer.
They're the ones most likely to have old equipment, aren't they?
Exactly. And a lot of times the case was that a lot of farm machinery gets donated or exported from places like America to South America and Africa, where they're already, you know, old. And then once they get it into this new climate and terrain, you know, it's just you start seeing tractors and things on the side of the roads really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how does that work? People contact you through the foundation?
Yeah, basically there's a forum online where any farmer can request a free manual.
Do you have an example you can give us of a farmer in a far-flung country that you can bring to mind?
Yeah. You know, I guess the best example was one of the first people I donated money to. It wasn't actually a farmer. It was an agricultural professor in Argentina who needed he requested some safety manuals for his classes, who I was fortunately had plenty of those, and I was able to help him out. I guess one of the unique things about or the different things about the foundation is that I usually use actual paper manuals, which when working with third world farmers certainly makes a lot more sense.
Because they can't necessarily access this online.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of obstacles, your chief obstacles, either in the domestic or in your business or in the foundation, have you encountered?
Well, as far as the foundation goes, the biggest obstacle is really finding farmers to help. The big hurdle is the fact that I have an online business where most farmers who need my help probably don't have a computer or access to one.
Simply making awareness made to someone without technology.
Yes.
in a third world country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as far as the actual company goes, you know, there really hasn't been any huge obstacles for a while. I've kind of been wanting to further grow into places like Brazil and other agricultural fields for a while now, but the biggest problem there is just the language barrier, obviously. Having never learned Portuguese,
yeah,
it's difficult.
Now, you are a full-time student, have been at the University of Iowa. As you're going into your sophomore year, so this can't really take too much time in terms of maintenance, can it?
No, and that's
how many hours would you say you spend on a week for this $100,000?
No, probably I figure less than an hour a day. Probably I'd say 4 hours a week.
Just a minute, I'm going to give my notice and start thinking of a good idea. No, no, really, this is fabulous. An hour a day.
Yeah, just about. Probably a little less.
Oh my goodness. What is the future of this? Can you grow this current business, digitizing farm manuals?
Well, you know, kind of. The thing about the copyright law is that I won't be able to sell these newer farm equipment manuals, which does kind of set a time limit as far as how long Farm Manuals Fast will be able to make money. Since, you know, once people like my father start purchasing newer machines, I won't be able to sell manuals for them. You know, I don't really know what year that'll be when Farm Manuals Fast stops making, you know, $100,000 a year. I'd give it, you know, 5 more years at least probably though. So
what about copycatters out there? People who will take this idea. There's nothing preventing people from doing it, is
it? No, certainly not. You know, I was quite scared about that starting it off. And it could always happen, certainly, especially when I, you know, start publicly stating how much money it's making. But, you know, I guess
cat's out of the bag there.
I guess I like to think I have an advantage as far as being a younger person. I have more of the technology stuff down as far as website design and stuff like that.
What do your mom and dad back on the farm outside of Muscatine think of all this?
I think they're just happy they don't have to pay for college for me.
Yes, any parent would be. More than that, any other things?
Are they just... Yeah, I think they're probably proud of me.
I would say so. That would be a good reaction. Does this lead you to other ideas that I don't want to say you stumbled into this, but you said your goal initially as a junior in high school was maybe to have something to put on a resume for a scholarship, mm-hmm. a little project, and to make your life, your chores around the farm when dad says, hey, I need that manual, make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, certainly. One of the things I really found that I liked about Farm Manuals Fast was the fact that it created a solution to a problem that a lot of, you know, farmers were having. I think it really kind of made, not to be cliche, but like made the world a better place as far as, you know, making farmers be able to produce more like food stuffs and things like that. So I really like the idea. So I'd like my next business idea to be like Farm Manuals Fast, where it's helping people out, but in a much larger way, I guess.
Sounds like, I'm looking at your face, it sounds like you have an idea. You might not want to, it might not be mature enough to talk about yet.
You know, I've got some ideas. They still need some working with, though.
Okay, not quite ready to speak aloud. Tell me, in this amazing story, do you see lessons there for all entrepreneurs, people who are business-minded in search of ideas? So you start with a problem.
Yeah, definitely.
Recognize a problem and then...
Exactly. Start with a problem. Don't get caught up on the solution necessarily, because sometimes the solution isn't necessarily the best solution for that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess also my advice is, don't get caught up on the small details. You know, just remember, keep in mind that one goal you want to have and do, and make sure you do it.
At the business school at the University of Iowa, do you get to stand up in class or share this? I would think any number of professors would say, wow, Tyler Fincham, tell us your story.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I kind of always struggle with whether or not I should, you know, really make it obvious and let my professors know that I have this business. Just because it's something, it's kind of difficult to say casually, you know, that I have this business that makes so much money. So some professors do know, especially if I'm taking like an entrepreneurial class, you know, others don't necessarily. Sometimes I like to stay under the radar and just be like a normal student.
Mm-hmm. You obviously have some great, and did in high school, some great business instincts beforehand. Are you learning in the business school? One would hope then other ideas that will further it. Did you, for instance, recognize ideas that you had intuitively and now they're on in a textbook in the classroom? You're learning about it and you said, I did that automatically.
Yeah, there's some times where you're reading something and you get that feeling where, you know, yes, I had that exact same idea, or I've experienced that exact same problem with creating a business, which is a rewarding experience, I suppose.
Talk a little bit more about your work abroad. You say you have customers in every country of the world, every state in the union. We could say roughly, maybe there's a couple left out, but tell me more about the foundation, because what is your dream there as far as helping farmers, people in agriculture in the developing world?
Sure. You know, I mean, my dream is really just to be able to help as much as I can. I think since I've got this commercial business already that has all these great resources as far as a lot of manuals, and I myself have a lot of experience as far as finding manuals. You know, a lot of times it's really difficult to find manuals online, but having been in the business for 3 years, I know exactly where to find a large majority of them. You know, I really think I have a great talent in finding them and helping these third world farmers out.
Mm-hmm. Have any other businesses, agriculture businesses, perhaps approached you with seeking cooperation or perhaps a buyout for your idea?
Not really. I think most of the farm manufacturers like John Deere, when they're selling $100,000 tractors, you know, it's a small thing. Selling manuals.
Tell me a little bit more about your childhood growing up on your farm. And your parents still at the farm in the family?
Yeah, they both run the farm. You know, I kind of didn't know if they'd really be able to run it without me and my twin brother, but they're chugging along quite well. It's about a 200-acre farm. We got sheep, horses, and, you know, it's a really great experience growing up.
Mm-hmm. What were your favorite chores?
I definitely love the farm animals. They're definitely my favorite, especially the little lambs when they'd first be born.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then your least favorite things, the ones you want to dish off to your twin brother?
I despise and hated hay baling.
Hay baling?
Hay baling, yes. It's the worst activity ever because you have to do it in the middle of summer when it's the hottest and it's dusty and sticky and... It was just the worst.
You have allergies.
Exactly.
I have some very limited hay baling in my past, and that was the problem for me. All the dust in the air when you get up into the top of the barn.
Yeah, I'd always end up having to wear like the little gas masks and things like that.
Exactly. Going back to this digitizing equipment instruction manuals, you said initially it involved a lot of scanning. Is that not the case anymore?
Well, it's really more of that I've scanned most of the manuals that are really popular. You know, there's thousands of operator manuals and parts catalogs out there. I guess it's just kind of the case where I'm so busy that I can't necessarily scan them all. But I've scanned all the popular ones.
Mm-hmm. So your apartment or your dorm room is full of manuals?
There's some manuals. I try to keep... You know, the entrepreneurial center for the university has actually been nice enough to give me an office where I'm able to do a lot of work at, where there's quite a few manuals in there.
This is interesting. Do you think that the experience you've had here necessarily is confined with future ideas to the agricultural sector, or do you see this is something you can take outside of that?
You know, yeah, I definitely like the agricultural sector, and I like that it's, you know, it's the agriculture makes such a huge impact on the world. But I think probably for my next business idea, I'd probably want to go out of that sector and maybe do something else.
Mm-hmm. You think the ideas are universal enough? Find a problem and then get a solution. Don't get hung up on the details is what I heard you say.
Yeah.
Something like that. Well, we wish you well, Tyler Fincham, 19 years old, creator and owner of Farm Manuals Fast and the Farm Manuals Fast Foundation, which is helping farmers in developing world. Tyler is a sophomore at the University of Iowa, majoring in business finance, originally from Muscatine, a farm just outside of Muscatine. Thank you for coming into our studio. Tyler, you have to go off to a class after this?
Yep, I've got quite a few classes after this.
Thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
Okay, coming up tomorrow on this program, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. This is what the U.S. Constitution has to say about religion, but the meaning of those words, still a source of contention. Tomorrow on this program, we'll talk with Dennis Goldford, professor of politics at Drake University, about his new book, The Constitution of Religious Freedom, God, Politics, and the First Amendment. Tomorrow on this program. Also, we'll look at religion's role in the 2012 campaign. River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Emily Woodbury and Caitlin Fry. Technical support from Jeff Schmidt. Jeff Schmidt is the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.